As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Plus minus.
Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit then.
Plus minus.
Driving again. Tell Marcus that he asked that question about my defense. Do you hear that, Marcus?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night.
I think you got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Hello and welcome to a, I would say second half edition of the Warriors Plus Minus just because it's
final third.
Yeah, I know. It's just how it works, right?
Stretch second run. Half. Just call it stretch run. That's what it is.
Play-in preview edition, basically. No, that'll come in about a month and a half.
Ouch.
That's a bar. I believe that we could set the stage standings wise because I think that's like it's time, right? It's time to look at like how realistic the 5-6 is compared to. Like there, to me, there's three pods in the Warriors. You know, at this point, the Jazz, who they just beat twice, I think are crumbling. So the bad side for the Warriors, bad pod is the 9-10, which to me is like their favorites to be a 9-10 pod. The reasonable one that they need to try to get at least is the 7-8, and then the target one is the 5-6. We kind of talked about this going into the break, but coming out of the break, I'm a little skeptical. It seems like you guys are maybe a little bit more optimistic. Where are you guys at? I don't know how deeply you've looked at it, but
skeptical of what?
That they are going to for sure escape the play-in, but also like even getting to the 7-8 is going to be hard.
No, I've said I think it's tough just because you got to jump over so many teams. Like I think they can play better. That part I'm relatively optimistic about. We've seen that they're going to play better. They got a lot of games, right? More games than almost any other team. More games against bad teams. So if they get on a run, they could pile up some wins. Like that is going to be important. They can run off some wins and they can make a move that way. But I don't know that three or four or five teams are going to back up enough. These are not bad teams. Like they got rid of the bad team. Houston and Jazz are not good teams. They were played well, but they're not good teams. The rest of them, like, they're going to
fraudulent.
They're going to reel in, Dallas for sure. Are we sure about that?
Dallas is hot.
Non-tanking Dallas. They're going to reel
six
in
a row. Dallas,
the Kings,
a
I guess, would be the one we're looking at. But I think the Kings don't have a difficult schedule remaining, which is important when there's only 30, 31 games left. So I think I am optimistic about how they're going to play. I'm not optimistic that they're going to jump to six. I don't think six just because of the math of having to jump all those good teams. Suns, are the Suns going to fall back? I don't know that they're going to do that. I think they got a tougher schedule, but I don't know that they're going to go, they're going to win five less games than the Warriors over the last 30. So I'd say like eight might be the top end, I think, but it would be a good eight. They put themselves in a position where playing well might only get them to the eight. That's where I am.
It's hard to see it another way. It really just depends on how good you think these other teams are. If we're presuming the Warriors have a stretch in them where they'll end up, winning 60% of their final 29 games, that probably means another team has to have a long struggle stretch. So, I mean,
couple teams.
Yeah, I mean, some of these teams, I mean, they're right there, right? Like, 9-10, they're 9-10, right? They are 2.5 games, 3 losses behind the Kings. They don't have to play significantly better than the Kings to pass the Kings. Like, they're basically around the same. You know, Dallas, they're 3-3. As poorly as they've played, they're 3 losses behind the Mavericks with 3 times playing the Mavericks. So they don't have to go on some crazy run to pass the Mavericks. They could literally be a 500 team and beat the Mavericks 3 times, right? I don't think the space is that crazy. But the question is, do they have enough of them to do a crazy run to pass these, to like really make the jump? I don't know that they have it in them, because the thing that is an issue has been an issue for 2/3 of the season, which means it's probably going to be an issue for the last third of the season. So like, I don't think these other teams are so grand. I guess that's part of it. I can see Kyrie getting hurt and then Dallas tanks. That's not an unrealistic thing. It's not like, oh, that won't happen.
That was last year.
I can see Bradley Beal getting hurt and Phoenix falls. Like, I can see the Kings imploding. Like, these aren't major reaches. You know what I'm saying? Like, these teams have the ability to fall out. But I just feel like they're all in the same bunch. The chances of the Warriors ended up at the top of the bunch.
Probably too strong, but to me, again, like the 7-8. I think if you just get into the 7-8, you then have 2 chances to win one game instead of you got to win 2 straight to save your season.
Probably. I mean, I hear you, but 7-8 is 1 game behind 6. It's not like they're 4 games behind 6. They're 1 loss behind 6.
I agree, but I think when we start to like try to leap them 5 spots, it's like another team has to do what you're talking about. Another team has to crumble. Yeah, another team,
not just one.
I understand.
Team.
I'm just saying they don't have
four teams doing it. You know,
I'm just saying they don't have to drop completely. I don't want to make it sound like they got to be the Rockets and just tank spiral. They just have to be a 500 team instead of a 58% win.
Well,
team.
Let's talk like Warriors. That's what then. I'm saying. Yeah. You just said 29 games, and they've played about 3 or 4 fewer than most of these teams because they had a 9-day break. What, 18-11? Are you talking 20-9?
That's the thing. I don't know that they could do that.
Yeah. And they've got so many games. They're not going to have a lot of rest either. Like, if there's going to be an extra back.
And they're not above injuries. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what we talk about. Other teams could get an injury. What if?
No question.
We know the players who they cannot afford an injury. What if Kuminga gets hurt? Like, even, their third or fourth player. It's a lot to ask for them to jump all those teams. I just think they want to be playing well. I think if you really ask, and they're not going to say it this way, just be playing well, get in wherever they're going to get in, and so they can feel good about that first matchup, and then they maybe get, win one to get into the playoffs. Win one to get in the playoffs, and then you take your shot against whoever the 2 seed is or whoever they're going to end up with. That's got to be the most important thing. Now, here's the question I thought. Do you just go as hard as possible down the stretch, playing Steph and Draymond 35 minutes every night, back-to-backs the whole thing, put Clay in there, whoever else you need to, and maybe they're tired. We've seen Steph get tired at the end of these big pushes just to get the 7, try to take a wild shot at the 6, or at some point do you say, 8's all right. We don't need to gas it for the final week just to try to get the 8 and have Steph tire going into the play-in and maybe tire going in the first round.
I think it depends on how obtainable it actually realistically is and how much easier the path looks if they did get it. By the final week, you start to look at, who you might match up with in the playoffs. But, if there's a significant...
That's always tricky, too. Remember
advantage.
They wanted the Kings last year?
Yeah.
Give us the Kings. They barely...
Let's say, theoretically, you're sitting at the 7 and 6 is gettable in the final week. It's pretty important to not only get 6 because you have a guaranteed playoff spot, but also
you get about
8-9 days of rest before the playoffs, where if you're playing out of the 9-10, even if you fight your way in, you've just played 2, 42-minute playoff games on a Tuesday night and a Thursday night, and then game one is Saturday, and you're just like wobbling in to face the Nuggets in Denver or something like that. So there's a lot of event. To me, every pod, and I mentioned those pods, has significant advantages if you get into it. So, I would say they'll probably try to chase it down if it's there. I do agree with you that, if you got to go 7-0 to leap one spot over the last 7 games, maybe you throttle back a little bit.
Yeah, because you could try to go for it and not get it, right? And then end up as a 9, and you're going, we're exhausted, and we're the 9, and we got one game to play this out. We could get knocked out one time. Or if we win, then we got to play another one. So it's, you know, it's a better shape than they were in 3 weeks ago, and that we can at least talk about it. But, you know, they have found something. I think we all agree with that. It's, you know, they'll play it out the way they are. But that's a long way to go to get to six. It is a long way. And those are pretty good teams. And some of them are potentially very good teams ahead of them. The Lakers are sitting right in front of them. Like, they got to get over the Lakers if they're doing this.
Three Lakers games, yeah, by the way.
They're playing the Lakers tomorrow.
It was the same thing last year. It was literally the same thing.
Yeah, no LeBron possibly tomorrow. But that would be interesting with LeBron.
We'll see today. I feel like he might play in that game.
Yeah. What do you think the reception LeBron's going to get at Chase Center after the story that came out last week? Nothing? Same thing?
Same thing, because, you know, there's actually usually a decent amount of Laker fans in there cheering him anyways. And I think the Bay Area fans would find it a little disrespectful to just, like, suddenly, like, standing O LeBron. I don't think you're going to see too many Warriors fans doing
that. See Bronny signs up in the stands, draft Bronny.
They did buy a second-round pick.
I just want to throw it. We haven't talked about that. I know it's whatever it was, but we haven't talked about the Warriors reportedly, and I don't think it's been denied by anybody, that they called the Lakers about LeBron at the trade deadline. And the Lakers basically said, hey, maybe talk to LeBron's people, see if he's interested. How far do you guys think that went? What do you think that signifies for the Warriors?
I don't think it went very far. I do think it signifies that, you know, their realization that we've all had all season talking about, like, hey, they need a number two, right? Marcus has been saying this since, what, November probably, right? You know, that when the desperate times of the Pascal Siakam conversations were going on. And could you lure Lauri Markkanen out of Utah? Like, that's the hole on the roster, right? Like high-end talent next to Steph. They're deep. They're young. They're rising. There's even, like, hey, what could Kuminga become? We've had talks about, like, is there a 2-3 type ceiling on Kuminga? Maybe. LeBron, who generates a lot of headlines, they have enough of a connection, particularly with the Draymond side of this, which is kind of interesting, and the way he kind of tried to somewhat deny it in All-Star Weekend. I don't know if you guys saw that. But
who, LeBron or Draymond?
Draymond basically said the reporting wasn't fully the full story, and that he told Joe, don't put Kuminga in it. And it's like, if Kuminga's not in it, what are we really talking about?
Yeah, and Draymond's not the one who has to convince Joe not to put Kuminga in it. But that's interesting.
Maybe that's him cleaning up, like, you know, hey, like, he's sitting there trying to tell Kuminga, you're next. And then if you're Kuminga looking at those rumors, you're like, well, am I next for the Lakers? I mean, look, it's sexy. It's a headline. It's very interesting. Palace intrigue, all that. But I don't think it was close. And I think even Rich Paul, what are you going, like, Stephen A. Smith or something like that? And was just like, Warriors wouldn't be great for LeBron. Basically, I'm paraphrasing. I don't know. Marcus, what are your thoughts?
This little flirtation has been happening for years.
where
there's like LeBron, like, I would love to play with Steph. Can we do this? And remember last time Steph was like, we're good.
He called it like fantasy land, essentially. That wasn't the exact term, but it was like, it's like,
to me, the more interesting development of it is that it was leaked when it was the Warriors who called. That's the part that's a little interesting.
Leaked by who, do you suspect?
I could tell you this, not the Warrior side of things. I don't know which part of the Lakers side of things, because, you know,
I don't think it was Rich Paul either.
I would agree.
So TK, you're saying it's the Lakers who leaked.
I think I've already said that. I think they've got a passive aggressive relationship with LeBron James, and it was kind of like, knowing how Genie does, is like, hey, you want to go? We can try to figure out a way for you to go. Probably knowing that he wasn't going to want to go. I mean, I think all these things are within that context. But here's my I think the Warriors are going, you know what? If we can steal LeBron James, like, if they're tired of each other there, we'll offer him Klay Thompson, right? I mean, I don't know that they had to. We're going to offer Kuminga. I don't know that, you know, Klay and Moody and two firsts or, you know, whatever they could put together. If they want Chris Paul, you want expiring, you know, whatever expiring contract you want. If you want Wiggins. But I don't know that they were going to put Kuminga into that. I think they were like, we got a shot at something, you know, and we know. I think they called LeBron after 2016. I think they did. And LeBron had just beat them in game 7. You know, we'll talk about the maneuverings that they do. They end up getting Durant, so I think that worked out just fine. But, like, they call this stuff, and if LeBron wanted out, that's their way to get him, because I don't think there's a way to get him really other than that. They can't, you try to trade him, because this is when your expirings have trade value. they don't have trade value when they're actually expired. So just try to steal LeBron James for a year or two and see what happens. And you know, if Kuminga can learn from LeBron James and Draymond, that's good. It wasn't going to happen, but them calling was interesting. And yeah, and we suspect it was the Lakers who let it out. Is very interesting in the Lakers LeBron relationship, right? It's like, it's a little telling about that, how kind of tense it is, how the rest of the season might play out, and what could happen with LeBron's player option for next season. All those things are very passive aggressive. And it's kind of the Warriors on the outside looking in on that one and curious about it. I just think it was their shot at it, throw it out there. And as the way Steph responded to it, you know, when I asked him about it afterwards, it's like the things that you don't hear about are pretty big. Like there's other things out there that, you know, that all teams are trying to do. I'm sure there were other, you know, lines tossed out there. I wouldn't put it up against Joe to try to, you know, see if Durant wants to come back at some point. Like, that's just what they do. Not like saying any of it's realistic, but they do stuff like that, and they've always been intrigued by LeBron.
I bet you Joe's looking at Milwaukee. Joe's
well, yeah, at Milwaukee. Yeah. Pat Connaughton's the guy he's really loading up for. No, you know, they do that stuff, and, you know, most of it's unrealistic, and 99% of it never happens.
Yeah, I would say some of the, like, what I was hearing in the aftermath of that report coming out from some people on the Warrior side was like, doesn't sound like it's great over there with LeBron. Like, sure. You know, I do think that's was at the heart of why this surfaced. And again, I don't, that's all secondhand.
And why they called. And why they called, right? That might, you know, hey, if he wants out and we can guarantee him we'll take Bronny, then, you know, maybe we get 2 years with LeBron. And LeBron, Draymond, Steph, you know, Kuminga, whatever else they got, be very interesting.
As far as the team, you guys, like, to me, coming out of the break, like Klay going to the bench, like, I know it went really well, right, with the way he scored and turned it almost into a positive story in that, you know, late in Utah game Thursday night. Steve Kerr has committed to, like, this is the, you know, coming out of the break, he is going to be coming off the bench. Pajemski will be starting. But I don't think this is going to be something we're going to track all year, right? Like, I don't think Klay Thompson is just happily like, oh, now I'm a sixth man for the rest of my career. I'm just curious. Like, I don't know where you guys are at on that. But
I don't think it lasts. The reality still is they need somebody to spread the floor. So I just don't know how much defenses are saying, man, you got to get out of Pajemski. You got to get out of Pajemski. Like, he can shoot it. He's making it at a good clip. I mean, I think that one stretch – brought his numbers down, but he's, you know, he's bringing them back up. You know, what is he at? 38%, I think.
Yeah, he's up to 38. Yeah. He's been, I think he's 12 of his last 19.
Yeah, he had just a little rough stretch right there because I think he was like closer to 40, but I don't know teams are saying, you got to get out to Pajemski, and he's knocking down open shots. So if he keeps doing that, perhaps, but in the end, especially in the fourth quarter, which is, you know, I wrote about that, you know, that's going to pop up at some point today. Like, the fourth quarter has been their big problem. They just can't score. And you still need somebody to spread the floor for Steph. Like, if this is just going to be Steph, if you're not going to have a number two, you really need to get Steph get off. And Klay is just incredibly valuable in that way. And the moment he stops doing things that make him detrimental, then I think he gets back in. I think that's the problem. He starts doing things that hurt the team, overriding his intrinsic value. But to me, if he's playing smart, making smart shots and being okay with just going 3 for 4, 4 for 6, and, you know, not like getting destroyed on defense, because as Tim has been saying for a couple of years now, he's pretty good at guarding
big guys,
the bigger dudes, right? The power forwards. Like, Klay being on the court is still the problem. And that game against Utah where he scores 35 off the bench is the reason why he still has value, because everybody knows at any moment, like, it can happen. So I do think he ends up getting it back, because he provides one of the most important things you need with Steph, and it's space.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let me ask you, though, does he get it back from Pajemski? Because Pajemski's averaging 7 rebounds, 7 assists right now, like pretty much every game. I mean, over the last, you know, however, since he's been starting. I mean, he is a high rebound, high assist, low turnover, defensive, like, plus in some ways, right? With the way he takes charges, the way he, you know, Steve Kerr views him as a defensive plus.
He's a defensive plus.
So, and I would say he's as much of a spacer right now as Wiggins, probably. Now, Wiggins can guard your bigger wings, so it probably would depend on matchup. But also, like, I'm not sure if we're talking closing lineup, hey, Clay's got it tonight. Like, even the other night, they closed Clay in Utah. There was, like, he was in for Kuminga at times. He was in for Wiggins at times. It's like, I don't think it's as simple as, like, oh, just go take Pajemski's starting spot back. Like, there is, like, the rookies kind of won it, too. And I think that's the part of this conversation that we haven't talked about as much, or at least, you know, it's just not as interesting because it's not this dynastic guy dealing with it. But, like, Steve Kerr loves Brandon Pajemski, like, and views him probably as a future starter, like, pretty much from now moving forward because of all the small things he does. Connector, you know, he loves
yeah,
what, that.
Yeah, he always says that. Yeah, he moves the ball. The ball moves. And I don't know if that means he's absolutely going to stay in the starting line. He's probably going to be moved in and out. But God, does Kerr love that the ball moves with Pajemski.
I think starting, but closing.
Not clear. But here's another element to this, and I mix it all in there. So what happens when Chris Paul's back?
To me, that's the reason. That's the thing that makes Pajemski not expendable, but you're okay playing Clay more because you still have this ball mover presence guy. The question is, if Kerr has a choice between the two, does he take Chris Paul or Pajemski? Like, that's kind of the question.
Yeah, it might be Chris Paul to close. I think
that's what I think it'll be. Chris Paul to close.
We talk about these
over Clay and Pajemski is what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I think if you got Chris Paul, now you need Clay because now you need the floor spacer.
So, but then suddenly you're going Steph, Chris Paul, Clay, and then you're having the defensive problems you were having early in the season.
I've been saying this. This is the problem with that whole deal. This is why, for the sake of Chris Paul being a legend, they probably should have moved him because this is going to be a problem.
Well, then it'll probably be Chris Paul over Clay. To me, Wiggins, Kuminga, Draymond is what they're like kind of living with because they feel like they have to.
Are you much better with Paul Pajemski, Steph, defensively?
Well, no, you're going Paul over Pajemski over Clay if we're talking about closing. Because I think you're going Wiggins, Kuminga, Draymond from a defensive size athleticism standpoint, right? Like, that's your...
But you're saying one of the three, CP...
CP, Wiggins, Clay, CP, or Pajemski.
So, yeah. I mean, you could... But
so
you could
Steph
mix
and one of those three.
Yeah. I mean, I see that to close. And again, I watched those fourth quarter meltdowns and you go, this is why CP3 is important to this team. Because it, I mean, they had some meltdowns with him too. I'm not saying it's impossible, but you're better with him because he can take the dribbles into pressure and take them out of pressure. Like, he can do those things that they just don't have anybody other than Steph, and Steph's getting double teamed. Like, you know, the Kuminga pass, I mean, under pre was unbelievable in Utah. It was just 5-on-3.
It wasn't as bad as the John Collins pass, at least.
Well, the John Collins pass was pretty excellent, actually. Throwing
that's
in
the only thing I saved him.
But
I think it was worse than the Collins pass.
It was bad. And you know what?
Mostly because happened, he had four other options.
Collins hit the hot dog guy. I mean,
Collins pass was how about this? It was, the decision was worse than Collins.
Because he was
the
dribbling
execution.
It, but you
Collins
knew
was time. Clearly frazzled and falling apart. He was just like, I'm going to blow the game. Like, I get that.
I'll just say, if you have Chris Paul in there, maybe Kuminga turns around, looks for CP3, and just gives him the ball.
No question.
And, you know, and that was the problem with that play. And I don't think Chris Paul is perfect. Certainly not his age. But that's why
still Chris Paul,
would
man.
Still want him in the game and not have the meltdowns that they've had, certainly with him out. Some of them with him in, but there's just another guy other than Steph who can just say, defense, I'm going to just, you're not going to get me to panic and throw the ball away here. And they've got a lot of guys who don't want the ball. I understand it. It's just Wiggins does not want the ball under pressure like that. Clay does not want the ball. They're, you know, Kuminga probably wants it, but shouldn't have it. Like, Chris Paul's a guy who could spin it out and reset and try to milk 20 seconds off the clock. And I think he's going to play. I think he's going to play to close. And I don't know how many minutes he's going to play in the game, but like the final six, I can see CP3 being in there.
Can I ask you guys the more delicate question, bigger picture, macro question of the final stretch run, which is, you know, they're sitting at 10th. We've talked about the difficult path to even get in the playoffs. Even if they do get in, I don't think any of us are talking, you know, are about to predict some deep run. Obviously, Steph wants a deep run. Draymond, Steve Kerr, there's still somewhat of a faint belief that that could happen. But at the same time, as you are viewing this forward thinking, you have elevated Jonathan Kuminga into, you know, a bona fide number two, as Draymond Green called him. And now Pajemski has been elevated over Clay. Pajemski's playing 33 minutes a night right now. Even if you are correct on certain nights that Chris Paul could make more sense, or even Clay, you know, hey, go win your starting job back. I think there's a level of desire within this franchise that, like, this is about the future. You know, this is about Pajemski getting those reps, even if he makes some mistakes. This is about, hey, Kuminga might not have it tonight, but don't bench him. You know what I mean? Like, let Jonathan Kuminga play these big fourth quarter minutes. Let him make the mistakes. Let him grow, because into the future, and the future is the next couple seasons, but it's beyond, obviously. You want Pajemski heading into the summer with as much experience as you can get, and Kuminga. And, you know, we can even go lower level, Trace Jackson Davis, right? There's a little push and pull there. You know, Moody, that's always a kind of a conversation.
Lester Quinones.
Quinones, sure. But, you know, like, to me, that's a bigger question, because, yeah, there's certain nights where it's like, you know, Chris Paul would really help right now, but it's like, should Pajemski just be getting these reps? You know what I mean? For like a team that's sitting in 10th, shouldn't you just give them to the young guys?
I mean, they've never done that. So why would they start now?
Because there's a turning of the corner. I mean, they've never benched Klay Thompson
no,
either.
I'm saying, I know what you're saying. But you're saying it should be done because they've never done it and it didn't work, right? Because now, I mean, I feel like Kuminga is there. You know, mostly, and you know, he's in his third
Pajemski
year.
Is almost there too.
I think he's almost there because he's going to play well enough to be on the court.
Well, and Steve loves his decision-making. This isn't some uber-talented rookie. He loves his decision-making.
I think if we're talking about, like, if he's not playing well, do you take him off? I think he's a rookie. He gets taken off. But I just don't think his not playing well days are far fewer in between than rookie Kuminga, right, or rookie Moody. So in that sense, where it's like, he don't really have it, but get him out there because he needs the reps. I think that's more of a second, third year thing with the Warriors. But I just don't think Pajemski is going to be playing poorly enough to not be on the court. Like, I think he's going to force his way on the court. So it's really a question of, do you keep Kuminga on? Do you, you know what I'm saying? Like, do you put Moody on?
Whose reps matter more for the Warriors into the future, Kuminga or Wiggins? I mean,
Kuminga's reps mean more, no question. But
Marcus, you've talked about like the whole playoff. Like, Kuminga like doesn't even really have playoff experience. I mean, obviously he's been in a playoff game, but he has not been trusted with a rotation spot in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's got to have it. I feel like he's got to have that. That's what I'm saying. I feel like even when Kuminga's not playing well, like to me, that Utah game was great. He needs to feel that, right? He needs to know what that feels like. He needs to understand, like, reading and how when he gets panicked in the moment, he can't just, like, that's how you learn how to behave in tight games is you trick those off a few times and now you know what not to do. Now, usually that's happening on a bad team. Like, this is what Scotty Barnes has been doing for the last 3 years on Toronto, right? But it doesn't matter because he's playing on a, like, a middling, you know, Eastern Conference team. Kuminga hasn't been able to do that. I just think Pods is going to play his way into the minutes anyway. Like, by sheer virtue of when you list the best eight players, he's probably going to be one of them. You know what I'm saying? So I guess it's less charity with him than it is more like...
Well, we're talking closing now, which isn't eight. Yeah, right?
I just think it's a compromise. It's like, if Chris Paul is by far the best choice, you play him. If he's not, maybe you start thinking about not playing him 24 minutes and he plays 16. He's not going to be thrilled by that.
No.
At this point, okay, so what? You know, not so what, because he's a Hall of Fame player and you respect that, but also they got to go with what's best for the franchise, and he's probably not going to be on the team next season. Or, you know, and unless he wants to come back for $15 million, I don't know that he would. I just think that you have to, it's percentage of this, it's 52% chance of this. And then when it goes bad, you go to something else. I just think, you know, you got to be more willing to lean to the youth. You got to be more willing to accept some mistakes. I think Kerr has done that with Kuminga. Like he said, like, I kind of like, he's going to blow some defense assignments, I'm still going to play him. Now he still kind of wants to react like Steve Kerr normally does and pull him out of the game. And sometimes he does. And most times he leaves him in. And I just think, whether it's Bajemski or maybe even Moody or Quinones, Chris Paul is the one where the minutes might get affected, and he's going to want, is not going to like it for obvious reasons, and they'll have to deal with that. And if he plays great and they're closing with him and he's playing 22 minutes, that's the way it goes. Like, you sacrifice one for the other, but he's got to play really well. They got to play really well with him for them to go with him for 24 minutes. If they're not, then he's going to lose some minutes, and they deal with that in the locker room and in the huddle after that. But I think they've kind of made that shift a little bit, and then we'll see how it goes game to game when he's out there. But I just don't think you have Chris Paul and then live through those meltdowns. I just don't think you can do that. You can't live through another, you know, Kings giveaway or Clippers giveaway with Chris Paul sitting on the bench in the fourth quarter. Like, I just don't think practically they're going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the young players are out there for that too, right? It's not like everybody's culpable. So at some point, I do think part of the development is saying, come have a seat over here. You know what I'm saying? Like winning the game, like prioritizing winning of the game is also part of the development. But I mean, I think one of the real difference maker, like, to me, the place where this question is going to be like, what are you doing? Like, how do you decide? It's less Paul Podziemski, more Wiggins, Gary Payton II. These are the middle guys. I mean, it would have been Looney, but Looney's kind of out now. But Wiggins is under contract. So, like, he's under contract for as long as, you know, for longer than Kuminga is. Gary Payton II is under contract. So it's like, it's not like they're going to be leaving at the end of the season where Chris Paul is. So what do you do with these middle of the pack guys who are not old, who are not young, who are under contract? And you're basically saying right now, hey, we just don't have a spot for you.
We got a spot for Wiggins. But yeah, it's
not a Podziemski.
No, he's playing. He's got to defend the best guy, right? They need somebody who defends best guy.
I think their default closing front court is Wiggins, Kuminga, Draymond. And then I do think, and Steph, so I do think we're talking about one spot mostly. Yeah,
and I think GP2 is going to be spot. I've said this, and I know people really like GP2 sometimes more than I do. And I understand that he gives him a energy boost and defensive, you know, real domination when he's out there, but you can't play him all the time because he can't shoot. And that's, you can only have so many guys who aren't going to shoot that jump shot. I get into this, you know, with the Podziemski issue, and he's shooting more, so you can play him more, but you can't have three guys who won't shoot. You can't have them on the court together, and GP2 will not shoot. So It's difficult to say, okay, we're building in 4 minutes.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. He's shooting 51%
when he's wide open in the corner. Like, you know, that's like is the pull-up jumper is what I'm talking about. To take the dribble, stop, hit a jumper. You know, they have a real lack of that. Real lack of that. That's why, you know, Clay taking the mid-range is really valuable to them because they don't have people who take that shot. And that's why Oklahoma City has guys who, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
But who are you playing that's taking it then?
You got more of a shot. Well, no, like you're saying playing him over Wiggins. Wiggins got more shot of it than GP2 does. That's kind of the spot because that's the spot right there.
No, I'm saying to me, like, there are scenarios where you got Steph on the court, and if you're going Wiggins, Kuminga, Draymond, do you throw GP2 out there?
You can. And I'm saying, I'm not saying never play him. I'm saying to close. You got it. It's either him or Wiggins or Clay, even
or Kuminga.
Yeah. Well, you need a power. You need a bigger guy, especially when you're playing Draymond.
That's all I'm saying. If you just don't have a plan for GP2, if the plan includes Kuminga taking over those Kuminga and Pajimski and Steph and Draymond, that's four spots to me. Those are the decisions they'll have to make. Like even so, if you're deciding, all right, it's Wiggins, it's Kuminga. That's who we're rolling with, and Pajimski. You know what I'm saying? It definitely leaves Moody out the mix, but...
Oh, Moody's out of the mix. Yeah. He's out of the mix.
To me, those are the more... Like, if Chris Paul leaves in the summer, like, this is decided. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I think he will if you only go play him 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah, he should. He should.
Yeah, he should.
Well, Joe Lacob's telling Tim Kawakami he wants to duck the tax.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to leave him and Clay.
Yeah, you got like $30 million between Clay and Chris Paul. So I don't think that's going to be quite doable. Although there's a way they can get even lower, and I think that's subtracting Looney. I mean, that's another way. So, but there's a lot to get into. We don't have a lot of time here, but
we got a lot of time the rest of the season.
Yeah, we keep talking about it. But
for the record, I'm the one who predicted the Warriors to get to the third seed. Just remember that.
Third seed.
Yeah, go with third.
Third is crazy.
I'm saying eight right now on February. How
call me saying eight? 21st, I'm saying that's a good. That's a good guess, Tim. I'm probably going with that. Seven. Oh, well, seven.
I'm going six.
Okay, cool. I'll sit in the middle ground. All right. And they're starting with a big one. Thursday night Lakers.
Big ball game.
Friday night Hornets. That's like in its own way a big one, right? They need to beat the teams they need to beat. Seth Curry in the Hornets and Del Curry. The Currys are coming in to ruin dreams. And the Nuggets Sunday in a big one. ESPN. I believe it's a 4 p.m. tip. So we will talk to you this week because we got some big games to come.
Yep. Jesus.